Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and our favorite video games. I'm your host, Joe Perez, one of several lore-focused folks from Blizzard Watch, and I've got my stupendous co-host with me today, Matt Rossi. How are you doing today, Matt?
Apparently, I'm a co-host.
Yeah, that whole mouth dry because we were talking
before.
Before the show for a good like 15, 20 minutes. It was good.
I don't know if we talked that long, but yeah. We did talk a bit. But I will say this. I had a decent Christmas up until the very end when I had to jam something up my nose. But right now I'm eating like leftover ham, as you do.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
as
you've
you
got
do.
Ham
yep.
leftover. I'm not eating it right now because I'm obviously talking. But regardless, I've got a plate here of leftover ham and the whitest thing possible to eat with leftover ham, which is jalapeno cheese whiz, which is like you took something fairly strongly Latin American and you turned it into the whitest thing possible. Kudos, cheese whiz. The thing is, though, is if you just want to make queso type dip really fast, cheese whiz is great because you throw in like some real cheddar.
Mm-hmm.
And then you throw the cheese whiz on top of it. The cheese whiz will melt and form a bond that will, thus you don't get the oil everywhere. You know what I'm talking about when you melt real cheese and it's like there's oil everywhere and it's not because real cheddar doesn't want to melt or real, you know, it's just the way cheese is. So this stuff or Velveeta works really well as a binder.
I was just going to say that's for those of you at home that was a family tradition too, was using the Velveeta for that, right?
Yeah. Velveeta or cheese whiz. Almost the same thing. The cheese was a little bit more soft than Velveeta, but otherwise they both melt really well. They both work well as a binder. So that's what I've been eating because you know what? F it. It's the holidays.
Yeah. So for those of you that are listening to this, this is the last episode of 2021. Christmas has just passed for those of you that celebrate it. Hanukkah should just be over not too long ago as well, or any of the other holidays that are generally celebrated around this time.
I think got to give a shout out to Yule for my wife. That's her holiday.
Shout out to Yule. And Three Kings Day will be coming up for those that celebrate it of the, I know, Puerto Rican and Italian persuasion, because my family celebrates it as well. But yeah, so we're going to be finishing off the year before we get into anything new endeavors. And I want to, first of all, thank everybody who's been sending us questions for games that aren't Warcraft or Blizzard related. We've actually gotten a bunch of them, and we are starting to plan a new series of shows based around those, and also some of the games that Matt and I just want to talk about. We are going to start doing that and put them out there starting next year, which at the time of this recording as well, next week. So we hope that you will be with us for that journey. We're not going to abandon Warcraft or Diablo or Overwatch or any of the other stuff. We're not leaving it completely behind.
But yeah.
We want to just broaden the perspective and broaden the scope.
Plus, I mean, you know, quite frankly, Diablo's got stuff coming out.
So yeah, we'll probably and we're going to definitely talk about it. Yeah.
You know, when Diablo Immortal comes out, like actually releases, we'll talk about that and so forth.
Yeah, with Diablo Immortal, Diablo 4, Overwatch 2 is still on the calendar, although, it's, I mean, even with it's been moved back, we'll talk about that as well. And when inevitably they announce the next expansion for World of Warcraft, we have plenty of stuff to talk about there as well. So we're not going to abandon it, and I don't want you to think that we're going to. Just want to make sure that it's clear. But Matt and I had talked about this for a while ago, and I know I've talked with many of you, our listeners, in one-on-one conversations about it, where we've talked about how much we love other games, and particularly story-driven games. As a matter of fact, before I started hosting this podcast, before Lorewatch ever existed, that was my bread and butter, is I ran a show about nothing but story-driven video games. It's been a big part of my life forever. It's what got me into lore in the first place. So being able to share some of the other stuff with you guys is very exciting for me, and I think it's also exciting for Matt. He can tell me if I'm...
I mean, it is exciting, but I try to maintain this constant air of being somewhat cynically detached, so I'm going to pretend it's not and try and look cool over here. Yeah, whatever,
man. So you're a cat. But, got it.
Yeah, I am indeed. I've actually had people tell me that. Like, seriously, I'm basically just a cat in human form.
Now, that said, if you guys do have questions about whether it's Blizzard stuff or not, or other games, and or if you have ideas for shows that you want us to do, like somebody did send in something along the lines of wanting us to do something with Chrono Trigger and Chrono Cross, go ahead and send those in to us. You can go ahead and send them into podcast@blizzardwatch.com. Send us an email. We'll be sure to get that. Just make sure you specify that it's for us on the Lore Watch, and tell us what you want to hear. And if you don't want to do email, we do have several Discord channels. Patreon supporters get first crack at that. So if you are a Patreon supporter, first of all, thank you. Second of all, head over to our Discord channel and toss it in our Patreon podcasting queue questions channel. Let us know what topics you want us to cover, or if there's a game you want us to go in depth about, or something that you might be interested in hearing more about. You'd be surprised how many people out there would love to know more about X game. Just go ahead and throw it out there. See what happens. And if you don't want to email us and you can't support us on Patreon, you don't have access to the Patreon channel, go ahead and send it into our Q and podcast questions channel. We'll be sure to look there as well. But before we get into any remaining questions that we do have for the year, I thought it would be nice to take a look back at the last year that's existed, not in terms of the world state, because, well, existential crisis, but more in terms of what we've covered here on the show. And I thought we'd maybe spend a little bit of time talking about some of our favorite topics or shows or things that we did that we really enjoyed throughout the last year. And I'll actually go ahead and start with one of mine, giving Matt a little bit of time to think about it. One of the things that I was really happy to do and I thought was really great is this past year we did a couple different series. We did a series of lore for the Diablo classes, ranging from Diablo 1 through Diablo 3, covering everything and going into why they're important and how the world of Diablo is formed by it. And I was really nice for me because as much as I love Diablo, I will never love it quite as much as Matt does. And so it was really exciting for me to kind of sit back and let Matt go. Not just because I like the sound of his voice, but because he knows things that I don't, and he reads things and has sort of viewpoints that I would never have considered or maybe not made connections to. And so it was really, really nice. And it felt like I was sitting in on a little bit of behind the scenes sort of like, I don't want to say like a professor like giving class, but that's kind of what it felt like. I learned a lot through that as just in general, and it was very exciting. The other series that I really liked doing was when we did the dungeon and raid series, where we talked about the different raids and how they tied into the overall story for World of Warcraft, starting with vanilla WoW and moving our way up. We're still going to continue doing that at some point. We have many more expansions to go, trust me. But it was really nice to do because I think that's something that a lot of people maybe over the course of years have forgotten how much the old raids still tie into the story. They just weren't as overt about it necessarily as the new ones are. The new ones, you get a quest that sends you in, your story gets told there, and you have to, you know, you complete it and you get your cinematic or you get whatever it's going to give you, and then it leads you on to the next phase of the story. But back in the day, it wasn't so overt. It was a thing that was expected for you to do. And as a matter of fact, I remember many people used to levy this criticism that they hid lore and hid story behind raid content, which they did. But it was maybe sometimes some of that connection was never overly apparent. So being able to go through, talk about how it shaped things, and not just shaped things, but informed later raids was really exciting for me because it was one of those intersections where game mechanics and lore sort of fuse together and inform the game as a whole. So being able to talk about that, explore that, and discuss it, and again, get other perspectives, was very exciting for me, because again, Matt has plenty of perspective that I just don't have. And so they were great discussions. Definitely some of the highlights from my year. How about you, Matt?
Well, actually this one's technically from 2020, but it's literally the last podcast of 2020.
It counts.
Where we did a roundup of the Shadowlands expansion to date, like the lore of it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a really good roundup. I thought it was something that we did a good job on, and it kind of kicked off a bunch of interesting Shadowlands discussions that we had. Like when we talked about the first ones, that was in like late January. See, I'm going to just be upfront. I went back and looked at all of our stuff while he was talking, because he took mine. He talked about the Diablo thing, and I was like, damn it, that was mine. I was going to mention that. So
sorry. It can still be in your list.
Well, yeah, but I mean, what's to say that you didn't already say? I think our interview with Steve Denuser was a real highlight.
Oh, yeah.
That was in February, and yeah, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed talking to Steve. I enjoyed getting his perspective. I enjoyed the way he blew us off on several things very, very nicely and gently. But definitely didn't tell us stuff, because of course he didn't. I mean, there was stuff coming, you know, he could have, but you know, his job is to not.
Yeah. I was going to say I don't blame you, Steve. I also would like being gainfully employed and continuing to do what I love to do. So yeah. I don't blame you.
Another one that I thought was actually pretty good, for more of what you added than anything I had to say about it, was, are we going to get WoW 2.0? And if we do, what would the lore reset be? I think in general, we both kind of dismissed it. Like, there's not going to be a WoW 2.0. It's not going to happen. But my response to that is always very much a shutdown. You went with why it wouldn't happen, and I think that was an interesting way to look at it. In general, I thought it was pretty cool. But I'm trying to think if there's anything else. You mentioned the raid stuff, which we did, and we did a lot of that, and that was pretty cool, I thought. We got up to Coilfang, I think. I don't think
we got through. Coilfang. We got through. We didn't do the eye. We didn't get through the eye yet.
Yeah. So at some point we'll probably go back to it. Trying to think of anything else. I think that's basically the recent Sylvanas post we did, the one we talked about the cinematic and so forth. Also thought that was pretty good again, because Joe. This is turning into a bro fest where and Joe did this, yeah. But regardless, I think Joe did a good job of explaining the stuff that isn't textual. The visual and sonic. So, I mean, you know, the sound and the look and how that's used to tell the story, because that's something we forget sometimes.
Yeah,
that it is just as much about what they show you as what they tell you. And I thought that was a really good one. So those would be the ones I mentioned. I think those are the, I mean, especially that Dan User interview. I think we did a really good job on that. So yeah, that's me tooting our horn. Those are the episodes I thought we did well. I will say, however, that the Diablo one was the most fun I've had in a long time on the show.
You can tell, not too, because, like, when you're listening to it, you can tell.
Not because, you know, Joe had to shut up and listen to me, because I don't like that, but because it was in depth on stuff that I don't know that a lot of people think about too much. Like, Diablo does something that WoW doesn't really do, at least not until Legion. And then it makes the classes you play, they aren't just classes you play. Like, if you're a demon hunter, yes, you're a member of a class, but you're also a member of an order. And it has an origin point, and it's part of the world. The paladins were very much that. The Templars are that. The witch doctor has a whole bunch of lore about places that you don't normally hear about in Diablo. There's a good amount, like the necromancers, the monks, the assassins, the druids, the barbarians. It all comes from a place in the world. They're all rooted in the world. And I like that. It's one of the things I used to like about, like, some of my favorite D&D prestige classes were always, in third edition, were always rooted to the world. It wasn't like, you know, just generic. It was always like, you know, Knight of the Fallen Chalice or what have you type stuff. Or Arcane Archer is very much rooted, like similar to the Elven Bladesinger, but with arrows.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing, and that's really seen in Diablo more so than you get, say, in World of Warcraft, where because they need to try to make a class work for all these different cultures, they kind of, I don't want to say dumb it down, because people use that way too much.
They pare it down to its essence, right? I think that would be more accurate.
Yeah. Well, they have to make it so that you know, an orcish grunt and a Stormwind soldier are basically both warriors, and they use basically the same kit. So if you're playing an orc warrior or an elf warrior or a human warrior, they still all have basically the same toolkit. And I understand why that is, but then you lose stuff like Mountain Kings, mm-hmm. and, you know, there's just a bunch of stuff that you don't get to do because it can't be unique. The way, if you look at Warcraft 3, the various units are unique. Like the orcs have their, you know, blade masters, and that's unique to orcs, and you don't see that anywhere else. There's other units, like the humans have their own units that are also cool and unique, but it's just different. And that's something that Diablo preserves. So I had a fun time talking about that.
I want to call out to, like, having Anne back for the 200 episode this year was,
oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Was absolutely a highlight. And Anne, I know you listen to this. We love and miss you still. And I know that our listeners, you guys out there, made it very clear that you would miss Anne as well. Not because you hated us, but because it was nice to have Anne back because we launched this all together. Right. Anne was here from the very beginning, and having her back for that was a very special moment. Another thing that I really want to point out is we received a ton of very good thought-provoking questions throughout the course of this year. And I, like, one of the ones that really stood out to me, or at least one that I really enjoyed, was when somebody asked us about the Army of Light and what would happen if the Army of Light came to Azeroth. And it spawned an entire episode, essentially, of talking about what would an expansion in which the light as the villain would look like. And it was, from my perspective, it was interesting because there's this pervasive thought that the light is just good and the void is just bad, and that's it. It's very black and white, very binary. And having a discussion where we were actually able to break down, like, no, here's what it would look like, here's how it could work, here's how the story beats could occur, was a great exercise because it shows, at least in my mind, that it's a, like, these things are more nuanced than a binary solution. So, like, you can look at the light, and the light can be complicated and messy. It doesn't have to be just, you know, one thing, because it's many different one things to many different people. So it sort of fits in, whereas the void is just everything to everyone all the time. And it's just inherently messy, but we've seen instances of it getting order and structure applied to it. So being able to go back and sort of puzzle that out with, you know, with Matt and have an entire discussion about it was really exciting. I like doing stuff like that. I like, if it's not necessarily a full-on tinfoil hat, which we've had plenty of those thanks to some wonderful questions from your listeners, but just kind of being able to go back and dissect something and create something that could be, that has a reasonable chance of existing because the framework is there. Not that it ever would, but that it could, was a fun exercise for me. It was actually one of the most fun episodes I had recording, just because it was every time, like, it's one of those episodes, like, if you listen to it, I would say something and Matt would be like, oh, but what about this? And then Matt would say something, and I'd be like, oh, what about this? And I love those episodes where we collaboratively build off each other and spiral out of control a little bit, which is, honestly, it's super fun to do. But yeah,
no, I agree.
But yeah, it's been a wonderful year so far. Was there any other standouts for you?
I mean, I like to think that we're all pretty good, quite frankly. Trying to think. I mean, we do have a discussion about whether or not Dark Ranger class should be introduced, which I honestly felt was a little bit on the borderline between this show and the other show.
Yeah.
But it was a fun talk. I'm looking now and there's, like, diving into Diablo 2 lore and more lore and story of Diablo 2. And it's like, you really just, that'd be good. Let's do more of that. Let's honestly wouldn't mind doing a discussion of the lore of Diablo, the original Diablo, because you want to talk messed up.
Oh yeah.
Original Diablo. Cause keep in mind, they didn't know if they were going to get a sequel to that thing. They had no idea how, if it was going to be a massive hit or not. I mean, they wanted it to be what to do well, but you never know. So every time I look at Diablo and the way that Diablo worked, no other Diablo game has ever tried to be that self-contained. The rest of them have all traveled the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like Diablo 2, Diablo 3, Diablo Immortal is going to, Diablo 4 almost certainly is going to. Diablo didn't. Diablo, you show up in a town and that's where everything happens. There's only one place you actually go. It's like Tristram Cathedral. That's it. That's where everything happens in that game. So it is interesting to me, like, to look back at that. And if we ever did talk about that, it'd be great. But I liked Diablo 2 just for setting up. It's for people who'd never played it. And before this year, that was a lot of people because the game is 22 years old.
Yeah.
There are people who are playing games right now who are like, you know, half that age. Of course, they didn't play it. They weren't even a fetus yet. So I had fun talking about the story. That's one I would throw.
Another one I really enjoyed us covering as well is actually from January of last year, or 2020, which I'm going to include in here because we carried over into 2021 with it a little bit. And I didn't realize that we did this, but we kind of circled back on it a couple times. The old topic of why Night Elves should be Paladins and the case for it and how we sort of broke that down. We did that multiple times. We did that originally in, like I said, January 2020. But in 2021, we also went through because we had a question from a listener who asked us to sort of define all of Paladinhood for all of the races and how it could and should work. And we broke that down. And I always thought that was fun, too, because one of the things I like doing is taking a look at the in-game cultures of the various races of Warcraft. And they are pretty unique when you actually like look at them on paper. Or look at them through the lore lens instead of just game mechanics, and seeing how they view things and seeing the similarities, it really breaks down like some of the parallels to real life. Where like when I was in college, one of the things I really loved studying was world religion, in particular proto religion, where like you could take a look at like different areas of the world where different religions have sprung up and see the similarities and sort of like the early versions of those religions where like you would carry ideas from like, you know, Greece and Rome and Mesopotamia and different places and trace it back and see like, oh, okay, I could see where this evolved into this and this evolved into this. And there is actually a lot of that in Warcraft. There's a lot of like carryover. And it feels like when they finally started fleshing out the races, because again, they didn't expect World of Warcraft to really exist. This is another thing where it was a great experiment. They expected it to maybe last 2 years at most. That was their like long view plan is like, hey, we're going to make it 2 years because MMOs at that time were, I don't even know what the word is. They were just like, if you weren't EverQuest, you weren't successful. And then WoW hit and it was like lightning in a bottle. It took off. It was just fantastic and people latched onto it and it became such a big part of like pop culture that they started fleshing out all of these little tiny things that they never really bothered to back in Warcraft 3, right? And so you got deep Tauren lore, you got deep gnome lore, you got all sorts of backstory of all these different races that weren't just humans or orcs, and being able to see like where the crossover is, where the overlap is, where maybe, oh, I can see where they may have interacted with a Titan or a Titan Watcher. And, you know, these two races view this event through different ways. And, you know, like look at the Tauren and the Night Elves, how they look at Anshi and Ilune and like going through like their reverence of it and why it's different. And then having the Blood Elves go through and do their thing. Like there's all these like little tiny chains, and then saying, okay, well, we can take these chains and we can kind of pull them back and link them to this core concept of a paladin. And here's how it would work. Here's how the power structure would work. Here's how the social structure would work. Those were super fun. And we would never have gotten into those questions or those topics. I mean, we might have, but we wouldn't have gotten there nearly as quickly if it wasn't for you, our listeners, sending in a question. Like, anything else you want to add to that one, Matt?
No, I think we're good.
So yeah, just some highlights over the last year. Hopefully you have some favorite moments as well. And we do want to thank you for sticking with us for the entire time that we've been doing this. It does mean a lot to us. And honestly, let us know some of your favorite podcast moments or some of your favorite topics that we've covered. Ping us on Twitter, ping us in Discord. Let us know. I would love to know what you enjoyed us doing this past year. Watch. So we can do more. Make sure that you guys get your money's worth. But we are going to move over to some questions here that you, our listeners, have, again, sent to us. Some of these are left over from the last previous weeks that we just haven't been able to get through. And I want to see if we can clear some of these out before we start getting into some more varied topics. Also, because I want to just, some of these are just great questions. But I'm going to go ahead and start. And this one is, comes from a person who goes by the name of Jin. I feel like I missed something, and it's been bugging me for quite a while. In Chronicle Volume 1, it describes how Norgannon saved the spirits of the Titans when Sargeras destroyed their bodies. The Titan spirits flew across the cosmos and smashed into the Titan Keepers, most notably High Keeper Ra, who realized that this meant, or what this meant, and went into a deep depression. Okay, with that very quick backstory, do you have any idea how the spirits of the Titans showed up in the Antorus raid? Great raid, can't make sense of the lore.
Yeah, I got an easy one for you here.
Okay.
When asked about this, the Blizzard dev team said, well, do you remember when the Avatar of Sargeras showed up in Northrend? Where were most of the Titans' essences kept?
Mm-hmm.
So it had something to do with that. That is the sum total of the explanation we have been given. We know that Aenar did not end up captured. So
how did Aenar get,
how did Aenar get to Elunaria? I do not know the answer to that question. We know that Elun and the Titans had some kind of relationship because one of the things that one of the pillars of creation that I always want to call Pillars of Eternity because man, that game is pretty good. But regardless, one of the pillars of creation was a tier of Elun. It was not an Aenar thing.
Mm-hmm.
So why is that? We don't know. We don't know what connection Aenar had to Elun. We know that Elun isn't Aenar because Aenar is currently stuck in the throne, you know, the seat of the Pantheon, and Elun is still out doing stuff because we just saw her in the last patch. But there is a connection. In terms of how Sargeras got his hands on the others, that's not explicitly stated. We know that Kaikeeper Ra actually took the Titan essence out of himself. He removed it. And he wasn't the only one to get it either. That's the other thing. The Titan Essence didn't just go into one keeper. Ra got Amonthul, but so did somebody else. And I can't remember if it was our old friend Odin or not. But Odin was the prime designate.
I think it was Odin.
Yeah. So it's possible that Odin also had it. At some point, he removed his. I don't know if Odin directly removed his or if it was simply taken from him. Or something else, I don't know. That do not understand, do not know. But that's what we were told, that the Avatar of Sargeras was in Northrend messing around with dragons for a very specific reason that had related to the Titan aspects. And since when the various dragons gained their aspect status, they had visions interacting with the Titans. So it's very possible that the Titan essences were involved in it. And that's why they were able, you know, we've even seen it again in Battle for Azeroth. When we're empowering our Heart of Azeroth, we use various energies from the Dragonflights, even though they don't have aspects anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because those energies have collected inside various artifacts of the Dragonflights. So it's possible that the Titan essences have been, you know, literally were hanging around inside Azeroth the whole time. That they just used the Titan Keepers as a means to reach it. But then Sargeras showed up and grabbed him, I guess.
Or other demons, because we do know that the Burning Legion had essentially hunters, right? They had hounds and hound masters and creatures that were specifically designated for hunting, searching, and finding things, much like rangers or things like that. So it is.
Plus, I mean, look at what you. When we went to Alduar, we saw in. I think it was in Legion that Alduar was under attack and Hodir gets kidnapped. Like they actually kidnap Hodir. Do they take an essence out of Hodir at that time? I don't know, but it is something that happens.
Yeah. And I mean, and I think that's really where it sort of comes in because we also don't know the real true details too about what happened with Sargeras destroying their bodies and if he was able to snag anything, right? Because as Matt pointed out, the Titan essences were definitely able to be split. And what if they were able to split further? Or what if he wasn't able to grab everything? And what if what the Titan Watchers got wasn't the full shebang? So like there's a lot of variables. There's a lot of stuff we don't know. And it's something that we probably won't know. I want to say almost ever, because at this point, the time of Titans is kind of done. We might get some hints at it moving forward. Like there might be some information that might actually be related to the Titans or at least the creation of souls or just life in general as we're going through Xerath Mortis, since that seems to be, while it's the Forge of Afterlives, there seems to be some linkage there since, again, we see, and this is some slight spoilers if you've been avoiding it in the next patch, we see like proto versions or new versions, experimental versions of the Pantheon of Death that are being created or are there. We're not entirely sure yet. I believe that the statement was that it were created using the engine. But if it could do that, does that give us any insight into what was going on, is going on, or did happen with the Titans?
Yeah. Because speaking of spoilers, by the way, the fact that Argus died in our hands,
mm-hmm.
his power was used by the Pantheon to trap Sargeras, and yet it was also used to jam up the Arbiter, which means that somehow, and we don't know how, the jailer grabbed it and managed to use it. Because remember, we were told that Titan souls don't go to the Shadowlands. When it went into the Arbiter broke down. Couldn't process it. What's up with that? How could it be used simultaneously to trap Sargeras and to screw up the Arbiter at the same time?
Did we actually get confirmation that it was Argus that did that?
Yeah, they've done. It's leaked from 9.2.
Oh.
I mean, they might change it. If they decide to change it, they might. But it's out there. People have data mined it.
Yeah, because there was some speculation, too, that it might have been caused by what Denathrius was doing as well with, or it might even be conjunction with the messing around with the light and how to weaponize it. And we still don't know fully what he did to that Naru, but we know that the Naru can't go back. So there's a lot of weird things that are probably going to get some information or some explanation with 9.2, which is good because we kind of need it. But I think we'll find out a little bit more there. And as far as what he was doing with the Titan souls in the Antorus raid, hopefully that part is clear. But if not, he was essentially doing exactly what he's trying to do with what he did with Agrimmar, which is torture it to the point where it becomes loyal to him and he gets part of his family back, which is why when we go and encounter the Coven, I believe it is, they're torturing the souls of or the essences of the Titans and trying to essentially break them so that they will go and accept a new coding or a new station, which I always thought was fascinating, too, because I always loved pointing out that at the end of the day, Sargeras was really lonely because he had Agrimmar. Great. And that was like his second in command, which was the semblance of his old life. But he didn't have his family. He didn't have any other Titans. He had demons. He had, you know, Archimond and he had Kil'jaeden, but those aren't equals. They're not equals to him, even if they think they are. And so like everything he did was trying to get his family back, which was just weird and sick and twisted in how he was doing it. But yeah, so we see them being tortured. We see them, their essences being used by the Coven. And it was always an interesting encounter. And in particular, I always loved pointing out, this is one of my favorite things, is in that encounter when you're looking at their souls, they're constellations. Like, they're constellations of stars. And this is very similar to what you see when you look at, when we looked at Argus, because when you're in the raid, you see I think it's when you fight Agrimmar, you go and you see, like, his soul hanging in the balance, like, in that center, like, point. It is the soul of Argus being tortured and used. And then when you are in Deepholm back during Cataclysm, you used to be able to look up at the ceiling. I don't know if you can anymore. I don't know if it's still there. But there used to be a constellation in like a pink cloud that formed a circle of stars. And it was all very like interesting to me that these titanic creatures, these beings that are sent to order the universe are essentially constellations. That's what their souls look like. I always found that fascinating. And I don't know if there's anything that we'll get about that moving forward, but yeah.
It's interesting to note that there's a Constellar in the new raid.
Yes, there is. Because there was a Constellar in Xerath Mortis that had been dominated. So there's some interesting stuff coming up, and hopefully we'll get some more answers. Hopefully more answers than questions, but who knows? But we're going to go ahead and move on to our next question. And this one comes from Malfecious, who has asked us many questions in the past. I really liked the most recent lore watch in which you discussed the new Sylvanas cinematic and appreciate the conversation. That being said, I feel like there was a major part of the cinematic that I'm not sure others picked up on. You spoke about how the scene with both Sylvanas mirrored the Harbinger short, and that's very much the case. But what about how the end mirrors the death of Vol'jin, where she gets named Warchief, down to camera angle and music choice? What are the implications there? Just a thought. Any ideas, Matt?
No, because, guys, I'm blind. I'm mostly looking at blurs when I look at cinematics. That's why I left Joe do that whole thing last time talking about the visual aspects, because I mean, literally I have to be squinting and blinking a lot to make out any detail. So I'll be upfront. Didn't notice that and couldn't actually tell you if it was true. Like, if you know, you're talking about it right now, I could not tell you. Maybe that's what the, maybe that's the case. Maybe that's not.
And I have a, no, you're fine. I don't know if I got that same perspective. I don't think I saw the same thing you're seeing there, Fiches. So there's this sort of, and I believe the scene you're referring to is, where she wakes up on the lounge, whatever, when her eyes open, and she like takes a gasp. Like that scene is similar, that it is a tight close up, but, and it's very dramatic music, but I think that's really, and I don't know if it's intentional to have a callback between the two, because I don't know what the significance would be in those two moments. So in the moment with Vol'jin, where he is naming Sylvanas the next war chief, he's dying. His last breath is to name her war chief. It is a dramatic swell because it's something nobody expected. And then he dies. And that's sort of like the end of the scene. And in this case, it's almost, I don't want to say the inverse. And maybe that is sort of the tie, but it's the music swells to this, the dramatic sequence where Uther has gone through and talked with her and presented, you know, here's what it is to be broken. Here's what it is to be fractured. You need to accept that these are things you did, that this is you. This is not a monster that is wearing your skin. It's you. It's a part of you. You did these things. You can't do anything to fix it until you accept that. And then once you accept that, you can move forward and try to fix things. And then sure, you know, get to that moment. He makes the statement, that I've done all I can. It's up to her now. And then her eyes open up, music swells, and then it cuts. So I think it is more a cinematic sort of framework than it is a deliberate tie back.
If that's what it is, by the way, I just went and like squinted my way through both of them. And it isn't really even a similar angle. Like Vol'jin is sitting and slumping down into a chair. She's laying down. She's flat on her back. And the angle is directly from above her on her face, as opposed to the Vol'jin one where he is, like I said, slumping, and it is at an angle. It is not directly on the face. But again, I'm a blind person. I have a real hard time with, like, I had to, like, I put my face up to the screen so I could get a sense of what I was talking about.
Yeah, it's
so, I will just say I don't really see it, but I'm not arguing that you're wrong. It's just very hard for me to see that. I'm not seeing it. That's just it.
I could see it. I could see the potential for it there. I don't think that's what they were intentionally going for. I think that might be an incidental. So there's this thing where Matt and I talk about this a lot, and I think this is a good kind of, I don't want to say segue, but to kind of put it in there. There are certain things, there are certain tropes, and tropes isn't necessarily a bad word. It's just a shorthand for, here are some standard techniques or framing or things that you do in certain situations. And at the end of the day, the WoW Cinematic team is exceptionally talented. Taryn Gregory and everybody he works with are just phenomenal as far as storytelling, as far as presenting things go, and working with what they're given as far as what it's supposed to be. They do a phenomenal job. But they also are very tethered to almost a classical way of thinking in a lot of cases, and that's not a bad thing. It's like if you watch an action movie of any type, you'll see the same key frames. You'll see the same key type of sequences, because those are our standard operating procedures for those types of movies. Same thing with like comic book movies. We've gotten to a point where Marvel has sort of defined a set of things that this is a comic book movie now. And now when you go and look at other comic book movies, you'll see others trying to mimic that because it becomes a standard playbook. And so you can find similarities between, you know, Shazam and Spider-Man if you really want to, because there are certain frames and cinema techniques that they just both use. It's not a bad thing, but it's not always necessarily a direct tie to those other things. It's also why, if you've ever watched some of the supercuts on YouTube or where people will take cuts of different movies and that they splice together so well is because of things like that. And so when you're looking at some of the cinematics, there is some of that in WoW. There is some of that, like if you go back and watch some of the cinematics during the Siege of Orgrimmar, during that entire patch, and then go back to Warlords of Draenor and look at some of the cinematics there, you can draw some similarities into how things are presented, some of the framing and some of the keywork, but it's not necessarily trying to tie those two together, anything more than that. So again, you're not wrong, but I don't know if I don't know that it was 100% intentional. It might have been, it might not have been. And honestly, if anybody from that team is listening, I would love to know if that was what you intended. Hopefully that answers your question. Maybe that and a little bit more, Malfecious. But we're going to go ahead and move on to our next one. And this one comes from our good friend Razorbird, who recently just joined us on Patreon. So thank you again for that. Greetings, watchers. What watch the watchers? Your answer to a question last week about the origins of Azerothian races and the curse of flesh got me thinking. We know gnomes can be transformed between flesh and stone slash metal. We see in a Northrend. We have seen both forms of dwarves or even crystal in one case. We've also seen the Vrykul have a non-flesh analog, but since humans are only descended from a Titan construct, not directly from one, do you think humans are immune from a reverse curse of flesh? Would they not have the code to trigger or reverse that you speculated last week? Or do you perhaps think that they would be transformed back into a large iron Vrykul, or maybe even a new form of non-Titan forged? Has this already happened in lore? And then there's a bonus question here, which do you think Magni's bling form has any relation to some implementation of curse? Matt, you love Vrykul. You've actually talked in one of our episodes quite a bit about the descendancy of humans from Vrykul. Would you like to take first stab at this?
Okay. Humans are not immune to the curse of flesh, or reverse engineering it, because we've seen the exact same thing happen to other beings that descended from a Titan. Like for instance, the Tolvir in Uldir. I want to say Uldir, but it's Uldum. I always want to call it Uldir. Sorry.
Uldir on the brain.
Yeah. But Uldum, the Tolvir we see in Uldum get decursed, and they are descended from big obsidian destroyers. They're not descended from Tolvir. The Tolvir, as we see them, are smaller, don't have wings. There's very clear, very much as humans turned from big, you know, imposing Vrykul down to humans, you see the same thing happening with the Tolvir. And yet the Tolvir are turned into constructs by Deathwing's cure to the curse of flesh. So there's no reason to assume humans would be like, nope, I'm staying fleshy. I don't think that they would swell back up and become Vrykul. I think they would simply become construct-like. They would essentially be much like the Tolvir did. The Tolvir did not turn back up into obsidian destroyers. They didn't turn into Moam. They just turned into stone beings.
Mm-hmm.
And that's likely what would happen. People forget this. Dwarves are the descendants just like humans are. Like, for instance, Magni was the child of other dwarves. He wasn't, like, you know, Magni wasn't an earthen and then one day turned into a dwarf. No, he's just like what you said about the humans. That's what happened to Magni as well.
And don't forget that some of the earthen also became Trogs, too.
Yeah, some of the earthen became Trogs. And those Trogs were later changed into Grommels and so forth. But also, there's some debate as to whether or not the Trogs are just from Earthen, because the gnomes were created. When we talk about construct races, the gnomes were created as mechanical beings.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't just stone and rock. They were metal and they were gears and so forth. And yet they were vulnerable to the curse of flesh. And we've seen, at least in Mechagon, that one gnome went so crazy trying to turn them back but couldn't figure out how, that he just began amputating parts and putting metal ones on in place. Because that's what happened in Mechagon. They didn't undo the curse of flesh. They were simply cutting pieces of themselves off and replacing them.
They were making them cyborgs, essentially. Like, if you look at the comic that they released right beforehand with the explorer that wound up getting turned into essentially a cyborg, basically his brain got shoved into a robot body. Like, that's what they were doing there. They weren't reversing it. Now,
but we know that they can, because when you go to when you're doing Wrath of the Lich King and you go to the Borean Tundra, there's Gearmaster Mechazod.
Mm-hmm.
And Mechazod straight up turns gnomes back into constructs, despite the fact that there is no living gnome who was ever a construct that was turned into a gnome. All those gnomes that he changes were gnomes.
Yep.
They were born. They had mothers and fathers. They had lives as gnomes. They may even have had their own children. And yet he turned all of them back into mecha gnomes. So there's plenty. There's no specific evidence of this. We've never seen a human affected by the cure to the curse of flesh. We've never seen a human reverted. But we've seen other beings that were born from beings that were converted or descended from them, sometimes at great length, because it's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason to assume humans would be different. When we see it happening to gnomes, we see it happening to dwarves, we see it happening to Tolvir. There's no reason to think it wouldn't happen. In fact, it even happens to Mogu.
I was just going to bring up the Mogu, yeah.
Yeah. Keep in mind that the Thunder King was a flesh-descended one. Li Shen was a fleshy Mogu, who was, like, I think a child or a grandchild of Mogu who'd begun turning to flesh. And he went to Raden, and was like, you got to fix us. And Raden was like, there's no point. Whether or not he said that because he was depressed about the whole Titan revelations or because this is what they were supposed to be, that I have no idea. But he didn't do it. So Li Shen ripped the information and the power out of Raden and ate his heart. Like, the reason that Raden has that giant chest wound is because his heart got yanked out and consumed.
Mm-hmm.
And then Li Shen had the exact same thing happen to him, which is where Raytheon got what he understands to be true about the Titans and Azeroth in particular. So we don't know for sure. There's no specific evidence. No one's ever shown a human doing it, but there's a lot of related evidence that would imply that, yeah, you could totally do that to a human.
I've been thinking about this a lot, since getting this question from Razorberg. One of the things that stands out to me is I think maybe we're thinking about, quote unquote, the curse of flesh in the wrong way. And I think, at least partially, I think that it wasn't, like we've talked about before, it's not a curse. I think that it is sort of like the natural transition of things. When the war is over, you get to be fleshy bags and proliferate and, generate souls and whatever the case is. I think the idea of reversing it is wrong. I don't think that you're actually reversing it. I think that's what they call it because that's what they want, right? It's a matter of perception. So, like, look at the Tolvir, where we want to go back to the way they were, but even when it's quote unquote reversed, it's not actually reversed. It's like Matt pointed out, they're not going back to being obsidian destroyers. They're just turning into stone living creatures. They're being transmogrified, essentially, in the same manner that Mogu do with everything around them. Every race in Pandaria, essentially, with the exception of the bugs, with the exception of them, were tinkered with at some point by the Mogu. The Mogu were flesh crafters. They're flat out called this. And I think instead of reversing the curse of flesh, what we're seeing is flesh crafting. We're seeing something that can be made malleable in the case of the coding already exists for us to evolve and change, and then that being manipulated. You're not actually taking away the curse or reversing it or reverting it. You're just recompiling it. It's like knocking the Legos over and then building something new with the exact same pieces. So, like, again, Matt pointed out, you have Trogs that then became Grummels because the Mogu decided they needed Grummels. They needed subservient, super powerful pack creatures, essentially. So they made them. You have the Xinyu, which were morphed from, why can't I think of their name now? Wow, they're everywhere.
Murlocs.
Thank you. They're morphed from Murlocs living near the pools. Okay. They're still transmogrified. They're still transmorphed. We know that they can also be corrupted. We know that they can also be shifted. So humans still carry that sort of genetic code, where it's like, yes, you went from Vrykul, stone Vrykul, or elemental Vrykul to Vrykul, from Vrykul to smaller Vrykul, from smaller Vrykul to humans, and you still have the ability to be manipulated or to be changed, and we see it all the time. We see humans that get corrupted by the void or are reborn or transmogrified into different forms. It's there, it's present. So I think maybe that's more it, and that there is actually no reversing of the curse, because one, it's not a curse. It's literally just taking your flesh and forming it into something new and just matching whatever perception it is. So by that perspective, I think absolutely that could happen to humans. I mean, if they can take on old god appearances and have tentacle faces, why can't they you know, possibly be turned into stone or elemental. I think that makes perfect sense, at least to me. And in terms of Magni, I think that's another case of it. So Magni's bling form, I think, has to do more so with not the curse reversing, but him being reborn and being reconfigured in the way that Azeroth felt was most appropriate.
Well, I mean, for that matter, let's look at the fact that it happened not for anything to do with the old gods.
Correct.
It happened when looking at stuff they pulled out of Ulduar.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was a ritual. The ritual was intended to make it possible for him to understand the pain the world was in. That's why he did it.
To talk to Azeroth,
And it worked. It just took him a while to regain control of his facilities after the ritual went off. The moment it changed him, he was more in contact with Azeroth than he'd ever been. To the point where, during Cataclysm, Thrall senses Magni.
Yeah. When we're going through that whole thing, right? Like, when we're going through the whole quest line with Thrall, he specifically calls it out. A being of diamond, I think he says, or something like that. Sorry,
well, please. I know it's in the short story as well. The one where Thrall has a run-in with Deathwing and ultimately decides to try and help everybody. He specifically calls out that there's a living entity underneath that mountain. There's a being that I can sense that is part of the earth.
Yeah, and I think that's something that's specific to call out to, and Matt makes a really great point, is it's not a dragon aspect doing it. It's not an old god doing it. It's literally that ritual turned Magni into what he is when he attuned himself to Azeroth. And I think there is a certain level of imprinting that was done. So Azeroth is a child in all aspects. We've heard that multiple times, a scared, dreaming child. Hence the nightmares, hence that Ulduar sequence that we deal with Magni. And to a child that's essentially constructed out of stone and ore and everything else, from their perspective, the things that have lasted for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, for an eternity for us, but a blink of an eye for them, the things that are most durable are ore. It's stone, it's metal, it's these things that are not fleshy and soft. And gems tend to be among some of the hardest materials. We know that they're used as magic focuses. They're used as items of great value. They're used in rune crafting and all sorts of other aspects of a lot of different things on Azeroth. So like Magni being transformed into essentially a diamond version of himself makes a lot of sense, especially if he's going to be the speaker of Azeroth and be a focus point. So he does the ritual casting, reaches out to Azeroth. Hey, I'm here. Talk to me. And Azeroth goes, I don't want you to die because I need somebody who's going to be around for a while. By the way, I'm going to turn you into diamond now because that's what I need you to be. And then poof, he's diamond. And he has fantastic magic channeling ability now, too. He's opened gateways. He's been able to use Titan technology in a way that we can't, in a way that his brother never could, as has been made evident many, many times over. So I think there's a purpose to that. And Titan technology also seems to revolve around this idea of, I don't want to say like just crystals, but like magical focuses and combining almost like science and technology with that fantastical magic. And we see that throughout everything. We saw that through, look at Draenei civilization. Look at the Draenei civilization before they got corrupted and became the Sargeri. Like, they integrated crystals into everything. They were magical focus points. We know that you can put souls in crystals. That's a huge thing. We literally just talked about that last week with Death Knights. I think him turning into a crystalline creature is not an accident. And I don't think it was a reversal of the Curse of Flesh. I think it was an intentional choice made by the thing he was contacting to basically transmogrify him into something that would be most useful for Azeroth. Azeroth can literally channel herself through Magni when she needs to. We've heard him speak in a voice that is not his own. We've heard him, we've seen him do all sorts of things that he was never able to do before. He was a mountain.
Not just Azeroth.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. Go ahead, please.
Argus
spoke as well. Yes, Argus spoke through him as well.
If Magni were on another world with a Titan soul, he could communicate with it. The form he has taken seems very much to be just a universal receptor for Titan forged or Titan souls.
Mm-hmm.
But perhaps even bigger than that, perhaps there are other kinds of world souls than Titan ones, but he can communicate with those too. I don't know, but I do know that he's definitely spoken to it through. He's definitely been the mouthpiece for two of them. because he didn't just, when he went to Argus, he was speaking for Argus.
He felt Argus. Yeah.
Yeah. It was in so much pain that he couldn't really say much for it. It just was just like, I'm in agonizing pain. But nevertheless, he did speak for it.
Yeah. So, I mean, hey, credence to the theory then, at least in that regard. But I think ultimately that's what it boils down to, is I think that the curse of flesh isn't necessarily a curse, and I don't think it's something that's reversible. I think it's just the ability to change that's coded into everything that is descended on that planet. Because everything can be morphed. Everything can be shifted. Look at night elves. Night elves were born from night trolls, right? And exposure to a titanic power. It seems like change is just a constant thing, and that quote unquote reversing the curse of flesh is just manipulating that ability to be changed in a manner that suits whoever is doing the crafting. And I think Mogu really are the key with their extensive flesh crafting. Not only did they want to turn themselves back into stone forms to be more powerful and resilient, which, sure, there's some truth of that, but look at, again, every race that they touched. Pandaren wouldn't have existed without their tinkering. Like, half the races in Pandaria would not be there if it wasn't for fleshcraft, legitimately fleshcraft. And I think maybe that's the way we start thinking about it, is, can this be fleshcrafted? And if that's it, maybe it's not the curse of flesh, maybe it's the gift of fleshcraft. But anything else you want to add, Matt?
I mean, the thing is that this is all conjecture, because it's based on a few things that have been mentioned in the game from time to time. But it is... Whether the curse of flesh is... I think that the curse of flesh, as we've experienced it, is just the old gods using something in a way it wasn't intended to be used. Because that's what they're really good at doing. Using things in a way they're not intended to be used. Corruption, that is their deal. The reason that is their deal is that they don't seem very inventive. So I think that what we're calling the curse of flesh is something they didn't invent. Because that would imply that they had invented it. And I don't think that they can do that. Or at least they're not very good at it. In order to invent something, in order to create something, you have to decide all the things it isn't. Like, what's the old statement, the old saw about Michelangelo carving? Like, you know, I just get the rock and I take away all the stuff that isn't the mm-hmm. elephant.
Mm-hmm.
That's, if you can't do that, if everything is true, nothing is true, because you don't pick anything. They're all just possibilities. The old gods don't know how to pick a thing. They just know how to shunt it to another thing, to another pathway. So that's what I think. That's something to keep in mind as we talk about this in the future.
I tend to agree. But I think that's going to do it for us this week, folks. As a reminder, Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. As a reminder, not that we should have to remind anybody, but those of us at Blizzard Watch, we still stand with the employees of Activision Blizzard, and in fact, the game industry as a whole, in demanding change for a better tomorrow and a safer work environment. I do want to thank you all from a little bit emotional standpoint here. The last couple of years have been very rough on everybody out there, and we've gotten a lot of comments from our listeners and readers out there that we helped to make it a little better for some of you. Hopefully many of you, hopefully you enjoy what we talk about and it gives you a little bit of a brief escape. You do that for us as well. Without your support, without your questions, without your interactions, this community, we wouldn't be here. And not to blow up anybody's spot, but there's been several weeks where I know myself or Matt have been pretty low, just because of, well, wave hands at everything that's going on here in the world. And getting into the spirit of the show, getting into the interactions and answering your questions. And I know interacting with the community at large when we're doing our live streams for the Blizzard Watch podcast and interacting with you on Discord, it makes it better and it makes it easier to deal with what we have to deal with, at least from my perspective. So I do want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for your continued support. And hopefully we can keep this train rolling indefinitely, because we love doing it and hopefully you love listening to it. But without further ado, folks,
we love you guys.
We love you guys, and we'll see you next week.
Dolphins.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.